possible vaccine for cancer, weather advice for NASA, maybe even new fuel discoveries that make gasoline obsolete. All of this and more is happening every day here at one of the nation's top research universities, and you get to hear about it first, right here on Classic City Science.
Today on Classic City Science, we're joined by Professor J. Marshall Shepard, director of UGA's Atmospheric Sciences Program, the host of Weather Geeks on the Weather Channel, and the former president of the American Meteorological Society. He was recently awarded the American Geophysical Union 2019 Climate Communications Prize. Former winners include Catherine Hayhoe and Michael Mann. You're an esteemed company there. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. It just means I'm going to get more trolled email.
Sure. Speaking of Catherine Hayhoe, I've heard Dr. Hayhoe say that the most important thing any of us can do about climate is to talk about it. Given that you were recently awarded for your work talking about climate, I'd like to ask, what are some strategies people should use to talk about climate with their families, friends, coworkers, and et cetera?
Absolutely. I think we absolutely have to talk about it, and particularly people like me, people with the expertise,
sure,
professors, scientists, because we often have this sort of notion as scientists or as academics that we have to stay in the ivory tower and publish these scholarly papers. If we're not in the media, if we're not on Capitol Hill, people with other agendas are happy to fill the void that we leave by not being there. So it's very important that the folks that actually have the expertise are having those conversations. I published something in Forbes magazine, The 9 Tips for Communicating Science to Non-Scientists, and I offer some tips that are useful for my colleagues in science or just the average citizen on how to convey complex scientific information to people.
So climate change, to me, seems to pose a really interesting communication dilemma for a few reasons. It seems really far off to the future for a lot of people. It's such a large issue that it's hard to think about one's own impact on it. And it really threatens our sense of self because the damage being done is in everyday tasks that are essential to our daily lives.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I think the narrative has been flawed, and that's part of the problem. I think it has been framed as about polar bears or about the year 2080 when we're seeing things happening right now that affect people's kitchen table issues, from water supply issues, public health and their children's health, national security. You know, I saw a recent study that suggests that flights are becoming more turbulent because of climate change. These are things that people experience every day. These are not about, you know, I love polar bears, but this is about my kids. This is about our national security. And we have not given that message to the public and frankly to our policymakers as well. And so that's why for some, it seems like this distant issue, but people don't connect those type of dots in the fact that if we're seeing more frequent drought in the grain belts of the U.S., they're paying more for popcorn and cereal and those types of things. And so I try to connect the dots for people and then they're like, oh, I get it. You mean to say that this intense flood that I just had trouble driving across the road to get to my kid at daycare, you mean to say that may have a climate change DNA because we know that we're seeing more intense rainstorms now and more urban flooding? Yeah. And so I think that's where communication comes in. One of the things that I've often talked about is the 3 M's. You've got to make the messaging meaningful, memorable, and miniature. You've got to make that so accessible for people. And so that's one of the things that I try to focus on by using things like analogies or things that are familiar to people.
Thank you so much for connecting those dots for us. So you mentioned the threat to national security. That's something that I've heard really hits home with listeners. So I'd like to ask you to tease that out for us. What kinds of risks are there?
Well, I mean, as far as national security goes, this is what the national leaders in the military are telling us. I served on a Pentagon study a couple of years ago for the Navy looking at climate change impacts on naval operations. And they tell us, look, our bases are at sea level. They're at threats from flooding. The Arctic is opening up as a pathway in the warm season. There's not any ice, so people can come across into our part of the hemisphere through that route. The Navy is one of the first responders to natural disasters like earthquakes and hurricanes, and so that stretches their resources. Look, you had a Pacific commander, the leading commander in the Pacific Ocean a couple of years ago for the U.S. Navy, say that he viewed climate change as his most pressing threat. It's a threat accelerant. If you look at the rise of certain radical groups around the world, it arises from their ability to leverage people because they're experiencing hunger and from drought in parts of the Middle East. You see areas where you have destabilization of politics in countries because of immigration and people leaving their homes because of climate migrants or climate refugees. So these are all things that destabilize countries and their social political infrastructure, and that leads to conflict.
I've heard that regarding the Syrian civil war, that there was quite a bit of drought that led people to go to the urban areas, and that led to that friction that destabilized the country and led to the civil war.
Sure. There is even some evidence that a lot of the migrants streaming out of parts of Central America to the United States, some of the connectivity may be related to the inability to produce enough agricultural productivity to sustain them.
And that migration tends to lead to political political agitation at home.
Yeah. So, and it's just important. I mean, I don't really get into those details, but it's important for your listeners. And I think this is a savvy listening group to understand that there are multiple tentacles of connectivity between changing climate, extreme weather events, and just things that they don't think about. Their insurance rates, for example. Insurance companies have been thinking about climate change for decades now, and then because they have to hedge their policies
risk
and their
management.
Rates and risk management against future flooding or hurricane damage or tornado damage. And so that finds its way into rates that we pay, as I've mentioned about gas prices and food, traveling on airplanes, even something that people don't think about. I mean, I didn't have to think about dengue fever here in Georgia or Florida. That mosquito that carried it lived far, far in the tropics. But as things inch further in terms of the warming envelope, further poleward or northward, we may have a situation where we're having to think about dengue fever for our kids. These are things that people need to think about.
Thank you so much for coming here to share that with us and give us some tips on climate communication.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
Today, we've been speaking to Professor J. Marshall Shepherd, the Georgia Athletic Association Distinguished Professor of Geography and Atmospheric Sciences. For WUGA, I'm Kodiak Sauer.